This is Johnny Gould's Jewish State.
Jeremy Corbyn is reinstated to the Labour Party after just 19 days. Sir Keir Starmer, his successor as Labour leader, hasn't restored the parliamentary whip, which means Corbyn can't call himself a Labour MP, neither can he stand as a Labour election candidate. But even this is subject to wobble, as Sir Keir has promised he will keep this situation under review. Today's guests are two of the most visible fighters against Labour anti-Semitism, Ewan Phillips and Emma Pickin, all the more courageous and brave because they've stayed in Labour specifically to fight for its soul.
This is a fight Starmer needs to win. The readmittance of party membership after 19 days is frankly astonishing. I mean, a case of this importance to be dealt with in that time just absolutely stinks of everything that the EHRC said was wrong with the party. I was just gobsmacked. The decision not to restore the whip is obviously the correct one and does go some way to limit the damage. But sadly, yet again, the Jewish community faced uncertainty and fear over the behaviour of the Labour Party. How can this be the actions of a supposed anti-racist party?
19. A huge undermining of Keir Starmer's authority. He made a big show when the EHRC report was published about how he would personally oversee the process of tackling anti-Semitism. And, I mean, basically, the suspension of Jeremy Corbyn lasted 19 days and outmanoeuvred by senior people who were supporters of Jeremy Corbyn.
You may not know too much about the remarkable Labour against anti-Semitism because, for reasons you can ponder, they don't get asked to appear very much on mainstream news outlets. The BBC and Sky have their media darlings for this story that won't go away. They choose Corbyn outriders Owen Jones, Ash Sarkar, and Jewish Voice for Labour, a Corbyn-supporting group who claim anti-Semitism is a smear and that it's overplayed, that it's an orchestrated campaign by Zionists against a socialist-leaning Labour. That mainstream news chooses the likes of Jenny Manson over my two guests today shows they don't understand the issue, or worse, they don't care. I mean, if I was producing BBC Newsnight and I wanted its flagship status to actually amount to something, I'd want the credibility of non-Jewish Labour members at the chalk face who are fighting this to talk this through, right? Not Manson or Naomi Wimborne Idrissi and the like.
The EHRC has said that the process for tackling anti-Semitism in the Labour Party basically wasn't fit for purpose, and as a consequence of those 4 years of mismanagement, there are racist members of the Labour Party who are attending meetings and are in a position to abuse Jewish members. And obviously we don't think that's acceptable. We want Jewish members to be able to return to the Labour Party, engage in their local branch meetings, and, you know, while there are people with frankly abhorrent anti-Jewish views, you know, that there are obviously lots of people who won't be able to do that. So Keir Starmer needs to basically get a grip, take on the sort of hard left who are resisting his efforts to reform the party, and he needs to accept the situation that he's in and fight back. Otherwise, he's not really going to have a Labour Party to lead.
LAAS is a group of 70 people who on social media daily expose the anti-Jewish racist rot accumulating in Labour since Jeremy Corbyn was elected leader. In his article entitled "The Labour Party Are Playing a Very Dangerous Game," anti-Semitism campaigner and prolific writer on Israel and Zionism David Collier writes, "That man has no place in any mainstream political party, and the Labour Party should want his toxic followers as far away from their constituency Labour Party as possible. From a justice-seeking ethical position, the suspension stroke expulsion of Jeremy Corbyn was a no-brainer. Instead, he's back in the party." I think most people don't understand how dangerous the current situation is. We cannot empower their anti-Semites, which is why what the Labour Party did with Corbyn is so unforgivable. Sir Keir Starmer appears only to worry about how Labour looks rather than dealing with the anti-Semitism problem that his party created. And once they're no longer Labour members, they don't seem to care anymore. To them, it doesn't matter that they are morally responsible for creating the monster in the first place, adds David. So here are two of Labour's leading dissenters against anti-Jewish hate, and once again, with my gratitude and from countless others, here's Emma Pickin and Ewan Phillips.
This is Johnny Gould's Jewish State.
For those who listen.
For those who are willing to listen.
Hello, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. Good to see you.
Ewan, it's an unusual honour. Not many people have come back to the podcast twice.
Yeah, very, very glad and very happy to be appearing again.
Because the world looks quite different. In the last episode, you said, I want to see people getting out to fight, confronting people in the studios of the BBC, of Sky, of ITN, to deal with the scourge of anti-Semitism. And now, at the end of this, Vindication, the Equality and Human Rights Commission, have torn a strip off the era of Jeremy Corbyn, and we're not exactly post-Corbyn.
The HRC report was devastating for the Labour Party. Concluded that they'd had committed three unlawful acts, and the range of recommendations which the Labour Party and Keir Starmer are now legally obliged to adopt are really quite significant, and are literally going to change the composition of the Labour Party forever, really. He's got 6 weeks to put those into place, and we hope that he does so as quickly as possible.
Because, Emma, this is a key moment for Starmer to... Because he's been a bit reticent. I suppose he was waiting for the report to be submitted, but he hasn't off gone about his business quickly by setting, I think, a bear trap for Jeremy Corbyn, this belligerence from the old man, to blame everyone else.
So he is still not gone, and there is now a fight on his hands, and this is a fight that he has to win for the Jewish community and for the soul of the Labour Party.
It's annoying, isn't it, Ewan, because the EHRC report should have been the broom to, you know, re-sweep a Labour Party, to reset it, but actually it's about the old man, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn has made it all about himself, and it just shows his lack of political judgment that he can't see, you know, how appalling it is that he's done this. And it's really just, more than anything, it's just underlined why the HRC report was necessary in the first place. What Jeremy Corbyn should have done was hold his hands up, accept the findings of the HRC report in full, and offered his full support to Keir Starmer to make sure that the recommendations were properly implemented in the time available. Instead, he's basically done what was characteristic of his leadership period, which is to dismiss the concerns of the Jewish community out of hand. He's done it in a fairly sneering way, which is pretty offensive. And, you know, like with Emma, I hope that Keir Starmer is able to execute the situation in which he's found himself and get Jeremy Corbyn, you know, expelled from the Labour Party. Because, you know, I don't think a Labour Party which is fully committed to zero tolerance on anti-Semitism is a Labour Party which Jeremy Corbyn should be a member of.
We've seen this before, haven't we? With Neil Kinnock dealing with the left. And, of course, he couldn't win the election against Thatcher. And it was bequeathed to John Smith. Tragically, he died. And then Tony Blair got the opportunity to become the Prime Minister. But it took the sort of three leaders to do that. And here we are again, what, 20 years later, and there's still a Tory government. And they've been in power for a long time now.
My feeling is that Tony Blair never really dealt with the left of the party, and I don't think he ever thought he would have to. And this is the legacy of that, the fact that people like Jeremy Corbyn were still allowed in the party. Any academic study of anti-Semitism on the left could have predicted the rise of what was, and did predict, you know, if you read David Hirsch, Dave Rich, people were aware that this swelling of anti-Semitism was happening within the party, and they didn't do anything about it. And my hope is that Keir Starmer will reach out and talk to all the academics and will understand that this, to eradicate the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party and to make sure that this situation, you know, to be found guilty by the EHRC is unprecedented. Yeah. And my hope is that Keir Starmer will look at the trajectory of how this happened, the roots at which it came into the party. And it didn't just start with Jeremy Corbyn becoming elected leader and suddenly, oh, what a surprise, we've got an anti-Semite running the Labour Party. This is something that other people predicted. And my hope is that Keir Starmer takes this opportunity to make sure that the Labour Party can never play host to being led by an anti-Semite ever again. Corbyn's reaction to the EHRC report is the reaction of an anti-Semite.
Yeah. Are you playing catch-up with Johnny Gould's Jewish State? I've had the pleasure of some really great guests. How about Douglas Murray?
Israel is a rare country in the West in that it does buck many of the trends. I mean, there isn't a fertility rate problem in Israel. For instance, as there is in most European countries, there is a strong feeling of nationhood and of the debts that the country needs to call upon in order to unite its people.
And Hillel Noyer, whose UN Watch keeps check on the excesses and mission creep of the UN human rights in Geneva.
The challenges are great. They're not going away. I am concerned by the cultural revolution that we've experienced in America in the past 5 years, known to some as the woke revolution, where there's a kind of a McCarthyism. If you say something, it could be canceled and fired from your university, from your corporation, from a journalist. And often it's an anti-liberalism. So that, to be honest, really scares me, because we need our democracies to be healthy, to be honest, to be truth-tellers. And so I am deeply concerned.
If you like Johnny's regular podcasts, think about making a donation at either patreon.com/Johnny Gould or buy him a coffee. He loves coffee. ko-fi.com/Johnny Gould.
Because, of course, anti-Semitism will never quite be eradicated from society, so it needs to be housed somewhere, and it needs to be pushed back onto the fringes. And when David Duke and David Icke and Nick Griffin think Corbyn's a good lad and they're going to vote Labour at the next general election, we should give them another party. We're never going to eradicate these people. No. So they're going to have to set up a party. I don't know, the Socialism of Fools Party. You know, what's a good name for them? They've got to go somewhere, haven't they? The split is inevitable.
That's fine. And, you know, there are plenty of fringe political organisations that they can, you know, shuffle off to and languish in a dark corner to their heart's content. You know, Socialist Workers Party, you know, various other, you know...
Chris Williamson's
new... racket.
But he's dangerous. I mean, he doesn't even pretend not to be what looks like, with the fist and the football club badge. I'm not going to mention the badge because it's a shame for the club's got nothing to do with them. They look like bona fide fascists.
They are fringe organisations. What the threat was over the last 4 years was that anti-Jewish racism, you know, was being mainstreamed within, you know, one of the two possible parties of government. Yeah, because of the nature of our democratic system in the UK, it's always either going to be the Labour Party or the Conservative Party. And it was simply, for me and for Emma and others, it was simply unthinkable that one of those parties could be, you know, institutionally racist, institutionally anti-Semitic. And so that's why these people whose values are anti-democratic, you know, their values are rooted in a worldview which would be completely at odds with a democratic party like the Labour Party, and they just simply have no place there. And we can't, as Labour Party members, and as a potential party of government, we just can't let these people play a role in the party organisation. They just don't belong.
So it was a very good day, the EHRC report coming out, and you guys submitted 15,000 pages of evidence. It covered councillors, actual chair people of constituency Labour parties, and even Jeremy Corbyn. And you stayed in the party deliberately to fight. I mean, you're right in there. as it was unfolding. You must have lost a lot of friends.
I've lost people who I no longer want to be friends with.
No, you don't want to be friends with them. No.
Because they, you know, if you're a person who doesn't want to stand against anti-Semitism, or, you know, then A, you're not somebody I want to be friends with, and B, you're not an anti-racist if you don't care about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
I stayed in the party because I knew that I'm not an MP. If I'd have been an MP, I would have resigned. But as an activist for Labour against anti-Semitism, it was far more important. You know, I had a bigger voice staying in the party than I would have done leaving. It would have done nothing but delight Jenny Formby if I'd have left the party. And obviously my aim wasn't to delight Jenny Formby. It was to make... At any point, they could have tried to expel me. You know, I had a letter from compliance for a minor, what would be considered a minor infringement on Twitter. And considering the nature of the people I was reporting that were getting let off, it made it clear to me how twisted the compliance procedure was. And so I wanted to stay there just almost to dare them to chuck me out, you know. And it meant that other people could see the voice of myself and Ewan and others who were taking a stand, and could see what we were saying and what we were doing, and the fact that we weren't getting expelled. And it kind of gave people a bit more courage to stand out. That, you know, I've had that said to me. They said, well, I could see what you were doing, and I thought, well, actually I can say something, because, you know, they're still in the party and they're saying something. So that was partly my reason. And it was also to almost as a combative thing with, you know, at one point it just felt like, right, chuck me out if you dare.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're very understated there. I mean, there's a lot of heroics in what you said there. I mean, basically, well, if I can stay, emboldens other people to say it, because of course they wouldn't have said it without you. You didn't have to do this, guys. I know that you have a moral drive to do it, and you'd be you know, lying to yourselves in not doing it, but even so, you know, there aren't many of you, and there was a torrent of people against you. Staying silent, actually.
Yeah.
While you spoke out.
I mean, I think the most notable sort of shift in the attitudes of a lot of Labour members and people who've been, you know, initially very supportive of Labour against anti-Semitism was after Corbyn and Labour performed particularly well. I mean, they didn't win, but they did perform better than expected in 2017. There was suddenly quite a notable shift, where people who had been previously critical of Jeremy Corbyn because they felt he was an electoral disaster, and mentioned anti-Semitism as part of their complaint, suddenly quietened down about that. You know, there was that thing of like, well, maybe you know, Corbyn could get us into government, as, you know, get the Labour Party into government. And I think that was actually quite notable and sort of quite
hurtful.
Pretty despicable, really, how quickly people were able to...
And frightening to this Britain as well.
Yeah. And frightening, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely frightening that you saw that tribal loyalty. I mean, you know, in terms of it being, you know, the right thing or the wrong thing to do, you know, we all know the historical precedent, or various historical precedents, of when racism becomes embedded within a political project. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's no direct link from one point to an end point. But it was just obvious that allowing a political party to become institutionally anti-Semitic was only ever going to lead to a really, really dark and dangerous place. So it was obvious. It was just obvious. It just had to be combated, and it was just so wrong and so obvious what was going on that nothing
good ever comes from having an anti-Semitic government. Historically, no. This has been proven. We didn't just fight this for the Jewish community. We fought this for everyone,
yes.
For the country.
Yes.
You know, you can't have an institutionally anti-Semitic government.
No.
I've never known... I mean, if someone could name me where it's been great for the country, I mean, it didn't work out very well.
No, it's generally a conventional wisdom in history that a country that that's beneficent to its Jews is a country that prospers. Indeed, in the Torah, it says that you should pray for the welfare of the city of your exile, because if you do that, you will prosper, and so will the people around you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that is why, that's the rock of the synagogue service. It's why we pray for the royal family and for the Queen and all her counsellors, that they shall seek the welfare of the nation and deal kindly and truly with all Israel. And what it means by all Israel is, obviously, it was written before 1948, this old prayer. It means the house of Israel. It means every Jew in the world, basically. So there's a kind of, there's a prayer for the, you know, we basically, we want to shout, come on England, when we're watching the football or whatever country we're back in, England mine. Now listen here, so this is a key one. Starmer, he has to stave off a civil war and also not to cut off the funding of a major benefactor, that man being Len McCluskey, chief of the Unite and a Corbyn flag waver and a Palestinian lanyard waver while we're at it. How's this going to end?
You know, let's not forget, Keir Starmer was pretty happy being on Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet, and for his various protestations did defend Jeremy Corbyn against accusations of anti-Semitism while he was on his shadow cabinet. But he is in this position. He is facing a civil war within the Labour Party. I mean, you mentioned Neil Kinnock. I mean, Neil Kinnock didn't lose the election because he had a fight with Millicent. He lost it because he was Neil Kinnock. Mm. But the fight with Millicent was actually really beneficial for the Labour Party.
It worked. It actually was the bedrock of Tony Blair's years, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Because I think what a lot of Labour Party members don't seem to realise is that the British electorate, you know, they don't like political extremists, and they don't like a Labour Party that is being riven by ideologues.
Yes.
And so Keir Starmer, you know, really should sort of embrace this war and use it to you know, re-establish the Labour Party as a fully democratic organisation that, you know, isn't influenced by a sort of hard left fringe, really sort of establish a zero tolerance approach to anti-Semitism, because that will really, you know, transform his party into something which is, once again, a viable party of government.
I think the election of Keir Starmer as Labour leader was the first time in a long time that Unite, I mean, their choice of Rebecca Long-Bailey and Richard Bergen, they got nowhere. And so this was the first time that they'd really lost their grip over who ran the Labour Party for, I mean, I don't know, you probably know more historically. But the other thing is that he keeps threatening the finances. And what the thing that will be in Keir Starmer's favour is that A, Unite are not the biggest union anymore. And also that the private donors are coming back, and they are coming back to the party. So basically he can have, my personal feeling is that he needs to face down Len McCluskey. Len McCluskey has been one of the people involved in the party that played a big role in why the anti-Semitism crisis got so bad. Whether, you know, I'm not sure what his motivations were, why he, you know, decided that this was going to be a hill that Unite, which is a union that's supposed to represent workers, why he decided to spend a lot of their money on defending people like Squawk Box, or, you know, this is not really anything that, if I was a worker and, you know, and Len McCluskey was running my union and was sticking his neck out and threatening the Labour Party over over the fact it wants to fight anti-Semitism, I would be wondering what the hell is going on in this man's head. So my thing is, I just think Keir Starmer needs to face down finally Len McCluskey and see him out the door. He should do it.
Now, Lord Treisman and Lord Turnberg made the pretty instant decision to rejoin the Labour Party. Lord Birkenhead, Frank Field, he's not, nor is Lord Sugar. So is Labour a safe space for Jewish people? If you are a Jewish person who's been in the Labour Party and you left like Luciana, is it time for Luciana to bury the hatchet and come back into the party she loves?
I can think of a place where Luciana Berger might want to bury a hatchet, but I won't say any more than that. Look, I mean, obviously, yeah, I'm not going to speak on behalf of Jewish members. It's for each former Labour member to decide whether or not they think it's safe enough for them to come back. I think from Labour Against Anti-Semitism's point of view, we know that we reported a lot of Labour Party members with really disgusting anti-Semitic views. And over the course of 4 or 5 years, like those people weren't kicked out of the party. Like, because of mismanagement of Labour's disciplinary process, those people, there were people going to CLP meetings who were councillors, who are even MPs, whose views, you know, should mean that they should have been expelled to the from the party, and they weren't. And so I think what we asked Keir Starmer to do is to go back, have a look at all of those cases, and have a full review of each of those cases, because, you know, unless those people are actually kicked out, I wouldn't recommend anyone be joining the Labour Party until that was sorted. Because I don't want to walk into a CLP meeting with, you know, and be faced with a Holocaust denier who, yeah, I reported 3 years ago. Yeah. You know, it's just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, that is the acid test, isn't it? The idea that you're going to have to convene with people who have extreme and very nasty views. We can't have that in a party. I mean, that is the bottom line for sort of any decent person, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, on the question of whether people should rejoin or not, I think that that's a deeply personal choice, and I think people will rejoin or won't rejoin. I mean, you know, as and when they feel that their personal condition. It's not for Jews to kind of exonerate the Labour Party. It's for the Labour Party needs to do a lot more apologising before it's ever considered. You know, I think that there was a certain pressure on the Jewish community to say, oh, come and rejoin and help us resolve this situation. But actually, it's not that. That felt always to me the wrong way round. It should be the Labour Party saying, we will sort this situation out to make you feel comfortable, not kind of, you need to come back to help us kick out, yeah, all the racists, you know.
I mean, there has been a change of tone from the leadership. Oh, yeah. Keir Starmer is not Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, you know, so I can understand why you know, that those two lords that you mentioned, you know, felt they were able to rejoin the Labour Party. You know, there had been apologies. Keir Starmer had changed the tone and been much more welcoming. But yeah, I mean, I think equally at the same time, I can understand why Lord Sugar wants to stay away. You know, there needs to be evidence of tangible actions. Yeah. The HRC report guarantees that there will be those actions, but obviously there's still a long way to go before, you know, before the Labour Party is fit for purpose, really.
There is a bit of a design fault in Keir Starmer, which is, of course, he was a Corbyn shadow cabinet minister and openly, actively campaigned for a Corbyn government and paid tribute to him long after Corbyn's political body had gone cold, and said what a great guy he is, etc., etc. Yep, he came to our synagogue. I was there the Shabbat directly after the side of our synagogue was daubed with a hard left symbol of anti-Semitism. And he is also our MP for the synagogue as well. But he came there unannounced, and, you know, he wasn't invited. He was welcome. And he came in and showed some solidarity. People clapped him, and there you go, you know, blimey, a bit previous. But how do you consolidate his support for Corbyn when the going was good to now, oh, no, he's toast, that old fella. That's a design flaw.
It is a difficult one, because, you know, I mean, I think I would always err on the side of political pragmatism. There's not really such a thing as principle in modern politics. You have to, you know, play the game to get to the top, etc., etc., when you can make real change. And I understand that for things like policy, etc., etc. But equally, anti-Semitism was something it was obviously a lot more serious than that. So, yeah, there is a much more serious sort of moral question over the way that Keir Starmer, you know, normalised Corbyn. It wasn't just that he defended him. You know, you look at the Labour Party, oh, Corbyn can't be that bad because Keir Starmer's there, yeah, in his shadow cabinet, yeah, and the same with other shadow cabinet members. So I think he does need to sort of be aware of that role. Equally, at the same time, obviously, he wouldn't be the leader now if he hadn't had that position.
Right.
And he might not be in a position to... we might not have someone in that role who's going to be able to reform the party.
He basically said, I was on the record as saying this, that and the other about anti-Semitism. I remember very specifically an Andrew Marr interview during the IHRA crisis where Corbyn wanted to change a few of the examples to say, well, you know, if we can't find a way through the IHRA definition, we need to find a way of actually getting it signed. Nevertheless, like you say, he was a symbol of the normalisation of Corbyn.
you know, he will know that people think this, especially within the Jewish community. He will know that people think, well, hang on, you know, you'd, and I'm hoping that it gives him a bit of a drive to actually be a bit tougher than if he had been somebody who hadn't been so close to Corbyn that had taken over as leader. I'm hoping it, a little bit of guilt kicks in.
Redcar, Sedgefield, North Nottinghamshire, Wakefield, loads of places, Workington, Kensington. Oh, Tory. I don't know why Kensington wasn't ever Tory. There you go. Now, they, of course, were thoroughly defeated. Of course, one there is Tony Blair's constituency. Mm. We had Lord Austin of Dudley telling everyone, it's a binary decision, folks. There's only going to be two leaders, so you've got to vote for Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party. You know, he's ended up in the House of Lords, which is the opposite of prison. Well done to Ian. What is the future of Labour? I mean, can Starmer actually win in 2024 or 2023, whenever Boris calls the election, when COVID is that plague that happened 3 years ago?
Well, I mean, that's a really, really big question, because I think, you know, while COVID is having such a massive impact on our economy and on our society, that even predicting what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years is almost impossible. You look at the impact that COVID's having on the American presidential election. You know, later this week we'll find out exactly how serious that was, depending on who wins. But I mean, I still am fairly reluctant to see Keir Starmer as winning the election 2024, given the scale of the Conservatives' win last December. But who knows? Who knows what happens? Keir Starmer still has an awful lot of work to do to persuade the British electorate that the Labour Party has changed. If he could do that, then who knows? But I don't know.
One thing I did note was that Labour did rise in the polls after Corbyn was suspended. So, although I would never be able to predict, because politics moves so fast these days as well, and people's tribal loyalties shift around, you don't get the people who are, I've voted for Labour all my life and my parents and this and that, so I'm only ever going to vote Labour. People are much more fickle with their political allegiances. But I will say that having suspended Corbyn, it can only do the Labour Party good if they expel him, and I hope they do.
What a way to end the interview. Thank you. Ewan Phillips and Emma Pickin, I just want to take this opportunity, as I've done before and I'll do it again, thank you for everything you've done over the last 4 years, for being a Praetorian guard for the Jewish community. That's how it's felt for many of us. What you called concerns were a decision for me to pack up. And this is someone who was born in Birmingham, whose dad was born in Birmingham, whose grandpa was born in Birmingham, and whose great-grandfather arrived in Birmingham as a child. So that is a very, very, that is weird shit for me. For that to have been expunged, and for that solution also to have come from Michael Gove and Boris Johnson, who immediately drew a line under it, was one of the first things they said after they were elected during Hanukkah, the days after an election. I just want to thank all of you on the decent side of British politics. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Johnny. Thank you.
Never miss another Johnny Gould's Jewish State. And be first to hear the next show by subscribing now. Follow Johnny Gould on Twitter and Johnny Gould Show on Facebook. And if you liked what you heard today, leave a rating or review. That really helps bring more listeners to the show.